Damaged Goods Podcast.
Coffee, they say it's like something in the caffeine. It gets like your synapses firing. Same with like nicotine. Not that I smoke cigarettes, but writers, they love like coffee cigarettes, which is makes me want to smoke cigarettes, but not really because they're disgusting. But you see like those images of dudes like sitting there typing away, steaming pot of coffee, just like cigarette hanging out the mouth.
Right.
But yeah, it's it gets you like going, dude. It's great.
It does.
Unless you have too much, then you can't like go to bed after. But yeah, dude, I feel good like that with that.
It also depends on what you're writing. I was finishing.
That's true.
I wrote a pretty big feature, which, you know, hopefully is getting.
Talk about it. Yeah. Brag a little, dude. Brag a little.
I'm not gonna talk about the specifics of it, but it's kind of in the pipeline, and some pretty well-known people read it and really love it.
Okay.
But the night I finished the final act of it, I went and got that crack coffee from 7-Eleven, like the special brew. You know what I'm saying?
What is this? I don't know about that. What is this?
Well, it's just super strong. That's why I called it crack coffee. Because I was like, I had this, the last act, like really clearly in my mind. And I was like, all right, I actually wrote the very last few pages I wrote ahead of time. And I left a hole of about, which ended up being about 28 pages or so. And I wrote that in about 3 hours one night.
Woo!
Just because
of that 7-Eleven coffee. This is good.
Good. I was fired up, but I was like, I'm doing it tonight. And like, for whatever reason, I guess I was working at the time, and like, I can only start it at like 11 o'clock or something. And I was like, I'm going to get some coffee. I'm just going to power. Like, I'm going to do this tonight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I love that. Like, especially if you have like a deadline, whether it's set on you or you kind of have it set for yourself. I feel like a lot of people, myself included, work pretty good under that. Like, it's like a hyper state of focus, you know?
Yeah.
You block everything out.
You really gotta, like, you really have to learn how to set deadlines for yourself as a writer.
Yeah.
Because you're judged by the product, but also,
yeah,
you know, you have to, beyond that, like, you have to, like, look at yourself and say, like, am I really a writer? There's a great quote I have, I found a while back that I kind of had this, like, banner in my place from Aristotle, says we are what we repeatedly do.
Ugh.
And it's like, if you start something and you don't finish it, that's who you are.
Yeah.
If you start the book and you don't finish it, that's who you are. You start the screenplay or the pilot and you don't finish it, that's who you are. You're not like, you're this person that dabbles.
You get real close, but
yeah, you're not a writer. Writers, yeah. Like, if you're trying, like, even if you're not, you know, your goal isn't to make money, you're a hobbyist or something. People, I know plenty of hobbyists that are like very intentional about finishing books and getting it out there, however, in whatever capacity, whether it's self-publishing or whatever the situation is. And it's like, that's, you know, that's when you can really say, and also you can't really learn from the entirety of the experience if you don't finish it.
You're never going to be 100% satisfied with anything you did. You could always look back and be like, I could have did this different. Sure. Oh, shit, I wish I wrote that different. But that's part of it.
Right.
You got to, at some point, just draw the line, like, all right, this is going out there, and I'm going to accept it and be one with it. And I feel like there's like a, it's almost like a self-sabotaging quality that some really talented people have. They'll make the greatest albums and they'll write the best books or whatever it is that they do. But that last step to put it out there, there's some excuses they could create why they don't. And it's so you don't have to, you avoid criticism, not just of other people, but your self-criticism.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's, I think that for me, like, that's a major reason why I started the Substack. Digital Dash is because I wanted to force myself to put stuff out on a regular basis.
Feel like comfortable with accepting putting it out.
And just put it out, right. And also like learn some new skills. Like I use an AI website called Night Cafe for a good bit of my art on there, which is just because it's, you know, I got a bunch of credits and I think that's cool and something fun to do and different. And I want to learn about, you know, a little bit more graphic art doing that. But like, creating short stories and having to have a beginning, middle, and end and tying it up and just put it out there. And no matter the size of the audience or this, that, and the third, and see what's received well and what people kind of really gravitate to, that will like determine a lot of things as you write. Like you view the response. You don't really consider the audience while you're making the thing. When you have the idea, you're like, like, this is what I'm going to make. But once you put it out, you're like, okay, oh, people kind of like this thing, or people, or you know what I mean, or like, this is the best way to distribute it or whatever. Because you got to get past like, oh, what are people going to think? That's not gonna, like, if you are so consumed with what people believe, then you'll never be able to like really execute what your purpose is when it comes to creating whatever that purpose is.
I mean, you know? You look at some of the greatest writers or directors of or whoever of all time. There's some dude out there right now ripping apart Jay-Z. You know what I mean?
Of course.
There's somebody ripping apart somebody.
Somebody doesn't like The Godfather.
Yeah. And sometimes it's because they really don't, or they want to be a contrarian, or whatever. So you just got to have to deal with it. And it's tough, like reading comments and shit like that. It could be tough, but if you get good feedback too, ride that wave, focus on that shit, you know?
Right.
And that's try
the,
that.
The feedback is, you also have to consider the source. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Who is this guy?
Yeah, who is it, you know, is it, are you getting feedback from other writers? Are you getting feedback from reviewers who read stuff very regularly? Are you just getting
feedback from... Is it a guy on his mother's couch in the basement?
Yes, yeah, some dude on Reddit. Anything. You know, it's like who, you have to start to ask yourself, do you care? Because it's like, you can only care about so many things in this world anyway, right? So it's like, it really ultimately goes back to your priorities. It's like, how are you prioritizing your life? Where does your creative fall in it? And then when it comes to your creative, like as you develop it, like how much do you care about somebody's random, you know, if somebody's not gonna work with you on something or somebody's not gonna really read your stuff, it's like you don't really care about their opinion then.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's fine if people don't like a thing. It's just like, I think that there's so much negativity everywhere, especially in social media. Yeah. And like people get addicted to bashing something or someone or whatever it is, and just being part of the crowd that says, this thing sucked, this movie sucked, this book sucked, whatever it is, that like, it's like hive mind. They don't really have their own opinion necessarily. Yeah. They're just
mob mentality.
It's a mob mentality, and they're being a jerk because it's popular. So it's like, you have to also consider what today's opinion actually means when I say consider the source. Yeah.
And do you care more about that than you care about creating?
Yeah.
They're like, you know, letting your voice be heard, doing what you actually started out doing, wanting to do. Yeah. That that voice that cares little about that, but cares quite a bit about creating some great art, writing some great stuff, doing a lot. Very, very productive, prolific gentleman who's been on Damaged Goods before. My man, Dustin Green.
Hey.
Author. He's back here talking about the the audiobook, the ebook release of Avarice, right?
Yes, sir. Avarice is a short story anthology of three books, nice and short and sweet. Audiobook's only like 2 hours, you bust through it, one day's commute. You know, if you live in LA, it takes you an hour to get home, or an hour to get to work, hour to get home, you're done.
That's right. You got to go on the 405, that miserable traffic. Listen to this, dude.
Exactly.
Who did the narration on it?
So my homie Chris Lewis, shout outs to Chris Lewis, amazing voice. He's part of a really great group of men that I worship with. That's we have a group of men up in the valley that I've put together their own Bible study group from a bunch of different churches. And we meet every Monday and talk about life, talk about the word. And we really have some real talk.
That's good.
I think people think like, you know, if you're a Christian that things are sugarcoated in life, and it's actually the complete opposite.
Ugh.
It's like, you know, there's some rough things that happen. And you kind of, that's why we're there, you know, a good pastor tell you, a church is sometimes like an infirmary. You got people coming in because they're injured. You got people being attended to while they're there. And you got people who, they kind of got it together and they're leaving, but they might have to come back at some point. So it's like, Chris Lewis, he's a great actor. Also does dance, big into the dance community, great dancer and all that. Great entertainer.
Okay.
Sings, he does
so if a bunch they do stuff. A musical, do an Avarice musical,
totally,
you're good.
Yeah, he could teach.
One man show.
Yeah, he's doing some work right now with some of the other brothers in our group where they kind of do, they go around and do kind of a thing called schoolyard rap, where they go to different schools and talk about Black history and history of other minorities that people may not know about that isn't really taught in school, but in a format that can really, kids can absorb.
Yeah, yeah.
So
actually want to hear.
Yeah, it's really dope. But one of the first times we in there and like, I mean, as soon as the guy starts to talk, I'm like, bro, you have an amazing voice. And his voice matches the tone of...
But his meter of speech, right?
Yeah. He's a great actor, but his voice matches the tone of my book. It's science fiction, but it's crime. It's a little darker. And I was just like, man, when I start getting this book together, I would love to have him read it for me. And it was great. It was a crazy experience because this is the first audiobook I've done. And it's a challenge, man. Like, I shout out to the people over at Voice Tracks West where we recorded. My guy Andrew, Lucas, all the wonderful people up there, Susan, because they really, really helped me out. And you know, I don't. It's ACX has some very specific standards.
Yeah, dude, it's not simple to get that uploaded. You've got to meet a lot of audio standards, all that.
I do want to say this, though. I want to say this real quick. So the good people at VoiceTrax pointed me to an app called Audio Cupcake, which if you feel like you have recorded at the proper levels and everything is going well, and then you go to ACX to upload and it's just not working out, and you're like, man, what's going on? Go to Audio Cupcake. It's worth paying. I think it's like $20 right now for their fee. And like, you run your stuff through there. Audio Cupcake will make sure that everything is balanced perfectly for podcasts and for audiobooks.
$20 is nothing. That's nothing. Like the price of a small coffee now.
Yeah, for whatever reason you're having issues, your stuff sound good, but it just, whatever reason you feel like ACX is just bouncing it back all the time, you can't get your book finished, can't get your podcast up there, check out Audio Cupcake. Huge shout out to them, because that was like, that saved me a lot of time and
going
energy.
Back and forth a lot. Yeah.
I mean, listen, editing audio is very tedious.
Yeah, especially if you already recorded it with these guys and you have to make corrections and stuff like that. It's very tedious. A long way.
And you want to just, I want to also maximize my talent's performance, obviously. So it's like, after you've done all that editing and you make sure like, okay, it sounds like I want it to sound, the levels are good, you feel like, okay, I'm good. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the professionals said that, the guys at VoiceTrax were like, hey, we also have issues, and we do this every day. We have engineers that this is all they do, and yeah, we've had issues too. So they pointed me to Audio Cupcake, and it worked like a dream.
How important was having the audiobook for you?
Very.
Aside from like the hard copy.
Yeah. Well, see, I decided to not go hard copy with my short story anthology. So after this,
Why was that, by the way?
Well, the next step is a full novel, which I definitely want to go hard copy with. So Avarice is a primer for a novel called Imperium, which will be the introduction of a really cool character, I think, named Kel Odessa, his first book.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned him the last time you were on.
Yeah, so I wanted to just prime it with an ebook and an audiobook, but I wanted to reach as many people as possible. Also, it was about barriers of entry for me, you know? I just really felt like this being my first endeavor, I'd rather do something a little smaller, great, than try to bite off more than I could chew.
Smart.
You know what I'm saying? So I found as many tools as I could. Huge shout out to Nick Stevenson. I know I sent you his information, the self-publishing guru. I took his free workshop a couple years ago, and it was very helpful just to manage Amazon, choosing categories, finding, you know, he has so many different tools on there for you. That, like, I felt very good about that part.
It's good, I feel like, for new or younger authors to know those things, because it's tricky. It could really help maximize the exposure of your book.
100%. Keywords, categories, you really have to dial into that. Kindlepreneur.com is a great, great website for that I used to really set up my categories and my keywords for this book. And I feel very excited about that. Already I'm kind of able to kind of measure things a little bit. So once the book is released on May 20th, May 20th.
It's creeping up.
Yeah, it's coming very soon. So, I sent the book out for some reviews. I'm trying to get some good feedback on it, ideally. And obviously, you know, if you're out there and you're going to download the book looking for 4 and 5 star reviews, I really, really appreciate it. That'll keep me kind of in that window and keep pushing the book out there, because I think that people will be really excited to hear about the story of Kel Odessa in the novel Imperium. This is a good primer for that. This sets the world up for you. This kind of gets you into all of the things he's going to have to deal with.
Into your world.
Into my world. All the things he's going to have to deal with.
Do you yourself consume audiobooks?
I do, a ton.
More than like holding a physical?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I probably do audiobook the most, and then I would say after that is probably physical. I don't do a ton of Kindle, but I have a few books on Kindle that I push through.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah. So, audiobooks you're taking in, are you like what you're working, doing stuff around the house?
Yeah. Commuting, travel. Sometimes on a jog, mostly commuting, sometimes on a jog. I walk a lot in NoHo. It's just like NoHo's a little bit spread out, but it's very walkable. This is the LA lingo. Sorry, people. North Hollywood, which is in the valley, it's spread out. It's kind of where I live. So, just walking here and there to the store. It's, for me, it's just easy to kind of consume. And then it's like, if I want to make some notes, I can always stop it and
Do you feel like you have to be doing something for at least 30 minutes to, like, you're not going to do like a 5-minute little listen of an audiobook or what?
The interesting thing about audiobooks is like, you just listen when you listen. And then before you know it, you're like halfway through the book. which I think is, that's why, that's probably the other part of it. It's like,
that's true.
And the other thing is I pay attention to like, okay, am I paying attention? Because if like, if my, if I'm serious, like if my attention span isn't there, if I'm thinking of something else, I'm just like, all right, this, now's not the time to do this.
Yeah, that's true.
So just like listen to some music in the background, when you, you know, music, you don't really have to like always pay
attention.
That's
true, yeah. I mean, even like podcasts I'll listen to sometimes, like I'll miss certain things, but if it's maybe a more historical one or
yeah,
a,
something like a, you like story, want to like, dial
I,
into. Yeah,
I got to be like in the right element. I can't have my girlfriend. So I, sweeping or something.
I think because of my own experience and the way I like to consume books, I felt like, and also because I had a fantastic talent, I felt like, let me just put two and two together and make sure I put out an audiobook version. There are also some people who they're just auditory learners, right?
Yeah, it's true.
So
everyone,
it's like,
takes it in differently.
People take it in differently. So I wanted to make sure that I had a bunch of different ways people could consume the book, really. And
that's
I felt like, you know, it's a kind of a cool, you know, when you have action and stuff and you have a bit of a thriller.
That's
it's like,
true. The genre
it reels you in a bit.
Changes the experience.
Yeah,
I
the genre changes
that. That
the experience.
That makes a lot of sense.
So, perhaps if I was doing another type of book, it wouldn't have been so important to me. But because it's, you know, my book is science fiction, you know, thriller,
totally
kind of crime. You know, it's like I think that it took on some added importance there.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I because it's almost like you're like, it's like listening to a movie. Like back in the 40s when they would listen to what would be like a movie on the radio, like the old school shit. I didn't think of that. Yeah. Is that because, you know, I we all read different stuff. I tend to read, I don't know, like autobiographical stuff or you know, maybe a little poetic stuff or true crime stuff, you know. So it might hit differently in an audiobook. Like there's a book I read that I really like, but I didn't finish it. I got the audiobook version and it just, I couldn't pay attention to it as much because of what it was. But now I think about like the stuff you write. It does hit like a movie, like the visuals you'll see, your mind will create like right there for you.
100%. I think that I'm the same way. I like a lot of nonfiction. I like biographies, but I'm also, you know, I read a certain amount of fiction or do a certain amount of fiction by audiobook. It just depends on the genre.
Yeah.
I'm reading a really cool book right now. I got referred to earlier in the year called 6-4. This is like Japanese crime thriller.
Sounds awesome.
It's really, really cool. So, it's really cool. It's a good audio book too.
Or?
It's very plotting, huh?
Is it contemporary?
Yeah, yeah.
Like the plot.
I don't know exactly what year it came out, but it's kind of set in the, if I'm not mistaken, the 2000s. It's a timeline of a couple crimes, and one is late 80s, and the most of what's going on, I think, is in the early 2000s. But like, it's very plotting, and the guy who does the reading, he's a really good actor, really good audiobook voice, and it's like, he gets you inside the minds of the character.
That's good.
Inside the minds of the lead. And it's like, I like to, as I read, I like to learn more about formats. I like to learn more about why am I engaged versus why am I not engaged? Is it me or is it the book? And is it the pacing? Is it the reader? Is it this? Like, I ask myself that a lot because that also connects to, you know, a hardcover or a Kindle too. It's like, that actually, you know, at the end of the day, the book is the book. So when you're going through it, it's like you're asking yourself those questions. Okay, these are bestsellers. These books here are very popular in these genres. Why is that?
Yeah.
What is it about them that like really reel people in? But 6-4 was like I said, a recommendation I got right after New Year's, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna start. I just recently got to it, and it's been really good.
It sounds like you're a studious reader in the sense that you're studying the craft. You're always kind of analyzing it.
Mm-hmm.
Studying probably people's styles and techniques and reflecting on it, how it could impact yours. I like that. I respect that.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to, I do go that route a lot. It feels it can feel a bit academic, but like sometimes you
can't help it. It's fun.
Yeah.
Especially if you really admire somebody's
Sometimes work. It's just like, you see how you're affected by the book.
Yeah.
One I'm reading now, 6-4 is a good example. Cause it's just like, there are some things that happen after the first few chapters. You're like, whoa, like, and you kind of, A, I'm just viscerally affected, but B, it's like I try to mark in my mind like, well,
why did it affect
you? Kind of why.
How is it happening?
Yeah,
to you like this?
But like, I can't not read the book and be affected if it's a great book, you know? So that's like, if you have a great story, it's a great story. Even if you're kind of studying an author or studying it, it's like, you're still going to, people ask me that, like, man, do you ever, somebody asked me that about films. I was talking about this movie, and I like to, when I sit in a movie, I time it. So, you know, for those who don't know, like every minute on the screen is typically a page in the script.
Interesting.
So like, I time a lot of films, and somebody recently was like, man, do you ever just like chill and just watch the film? I'm like, I'm chilling and watching the film while I got the timer on.
Yeah, you can still enjoy yourself.
Yeah, it's not like I'm not enjoying. And also, like, not for nothing, if I don't check the timer, that means the movie is pretty incredible. That happened in Oppenheimer. I looked, the first time I looked down, I was like 30 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
I was like, this is amazing. Like, it was just like, it's a long film, but the visuals and the editing.
It flew by for me. The editing is insane.
It's
like,
insane.
The way he plays with like the black, the white, the sound, the colors.
Just the gases and the color. It's just like.
Christopher Nolan's great for that.
Yeah. So it's like.
A lot of layers.
If you're in a great experience, you're in a great experience. It doesn't really matter. Like, how you enter into it. So like. Books, films, that's the whole point, is like storytelling. You want to give people a great experience where they fall into it and they're in it, whether
like
it's audio.
I don't want to put this down right now. Yeah. I know I got to go or I got to get off the plane right now, but I want to finish this chapter.
Yeah, you step outside of time for a little bit and because you're reeled into it. You know what I mean?
True.
And it's like, I think that for me, that's the big thing, is great storytelling and like admiring it while we're finding my own.
So, you know, this Avarice joint is a little shorter, right?
100%.
Which I respect. I'm all about that. I'm a big fan of less is more. Editing is an underrated skill.
Yeah.
Was that kind of your approach to keeping it at that length?
Well, it's like, funny you ask, because like, so when I started, right, I had my main character, Kel Odessa, and I was like, I want to build up to him, right? And I had these other stories, and I was like, you know, it'd be cool if I did a bunch of shorts and then could lead up to a novel with Kel's story, right? But I had a few other characters, and I put the original copy together. I sent that out for beta readers. I got some good feedback. I paid for an editor, and the guy like picked at that. He was like, I don't think this is a complete story. I don't think this one's a complete story. And I was like, at first I was a little butthurt. I was like, whatever, dude. And then I was like, I looked at it and I was like, you know, he's kind of right. And then I was like, well, you don't need, because I wanted to have, I kept feeling like, oh, if I don't have closer to 10 stories, people are gonna feel cheated, or if I don't have it. And I was like, you know what? Like, just have the best complete stories and,
have,
you know, introduce
more,
the world.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just leave it at that. Also, I was able to amplify, you know, the voice of the villain in this particular one. As you read, you'll see how I did that, which I didn't do that originally in the version I sent to the editor. And I was like, you know, if you just do three really good stories, again, less is more, right?
That's what I think.
Three really good stories to introduce this world and to introduce what Kel is going to step into, and kind of little introduction to who he is, not really giving you a lot of information about this guy. It'll be, I think, very effective and something that people will be wanting to hear about the novel. That's the whole purpose, right? Is to kind of reel you into the world and really set it up. So I think that like it started out as like me feeling like I needed to fulfill a need, and it became, this is what it should, these are your complete stories.
Yeah.
This is what you need to build the world. You don't have to, you're forcing everything else, which is what you don't want to do when you're creating. You don't want to force yourself to do it.
I'd rather have people want more than not finish it too, you know? I feel like, especially with books, some people that maybe they're not the most avid readers, it can seem daunting or like homework, like a
100%.
Task. I'd rather have them finish that and be like, yo, that was great. Like, what's up with more?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, I did a third of it, you know? And maybe it coincides with sadly attention spans these days.
That's the other thing I took into consideration. Yeah. I was like, you know, if you do feel like these stories are like, if these are minor characters in Kel's story, which is what it ended up being, I was like, some of these characters are just minor characters in the story of your lead. Some of these characters have full stories that you can tell outside of your lead. So it's like, if you do feel like that, just understand, like, you know, as soon as people start to check out, they're like gone these days.
Some people will criticize you for that, like if you're like playing into the shorter attention spans, but it's not like a TikTok.
No.
It's just, I don't know, man. I don't want a 20 track album, you know?
Yeah,
I do like a long movie, but.
Right, well, it just depends on, and also, you do a long movie, Scorsese, right?
That's true.
It's like, it depends on who's doing it.
Yeah, you're right, exactly, yeah.
So it's like, you know, you kind of know, like, I'll sit down for this person, but it's like, My thing about it is, like, that was the whole reason for me doing my Substack Digital Dash, is I felt like I wanted to feel what it was like to, feel what it was like to create something that was shorter on a more regular basis.
Yeah.
And beginning,
like a,
middle,
like
and
a
end.
TV show, a weekly TV show.
Yeah,
used
yeah.
To be
and just like a self-contained story, and deliver it, as opposed to this larger world building where, you know, like, you can do both.
Yeah.
But like, sometimes it's just fun to be like, I don't have every single detail of this, but yeah. I have a lot of very specific ones, and I want to tell this kind of very human story right here.
Yeah.
And like, it's cool. Like, there's a benefit to like.
I like that. I'm a short story fan myself. I love reading that.
There's a benefit to people having shorter attention spans.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I just want to, like, what am I, as a storyteller, I think we're always asking the question, like, what are you trying to convey here?
Yeah.
Like, why did you sit down to write whatever this is, this novel, this short story, this poem? Like, why did you sit down to do it in the first place?
Yeah.
And it's like, if you can, on a regular basis, dial into that in less than 1,500 words, now you're like dialing in. That's very useful everywhere is what I'm saying.
It's true.
Because now you get to the heart of everything you're trying to create on a more regular basis. That thing has led itself. I wrote a feature recently, which is, we feel really strongly about me and my mentor and my reps. It's like, but it's because I dialed into exactly what I was trying to tell in the story. Like, I knew exactly what I wanted to say with it, the story I was trying to tell with it. And there wasn't a bunch of confusing storylines, and it wasn't, it's like,
doesn't no, get no, no, muddy.
This is what I want to talk about. This is the type of character I want to go through this experience, and this is the life that I want to show here. Yeah. This is where I want this person to start at. And this is, I'm doing this because there's something very specific I want to say. And then when I did that, like, it just made the writing process a lot easier. So like, writing shorter stuff, it forces you to dial into like the real nuts and bolts.
Though, like cut all the fat. Some people need that huge landscape. They need 3 hours or you know, 1,000 pages. And no, not criticizing them, whatever, but I like poetry. You know, I like hip hop. You could say a lot in 2 bars if you're ill, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think that also people romanticize being a creative too.
Yeah.
And that makes the work longer.
Yeah,
and
that's great.
The other thing is people fall in love with, writers in particular, fall in love with their work a lot. And it's like, you know, when you work as a screenwriter, when you're out here and you're getting notes, you know, I just got some notes recently on a feature from a development person, and the guy's brilliant, you know? And it's a thing where I was adapting one of my shorts, actually. One of the shorts is in Avarice. I'm adapting into a feature film.
Okay.
And so
it's very prolific.
Yeah,
very prolific.
I appreciate you, man. And, you know, I appreciate all the support people are giving me. But it's one of these things where you listen to what the guy's saying, and you're like, oh yeah, like, I'm gonna have to take some stuff out of this. I'm gonna have to make these adjustments. And you got to learn how to, like, even if you have an editor in a book, you got to learn how to work with others, even if it's your deal.
Not always easy.
Yeah, and you can't be so married to every single letter that you write.
Yeah, well, authors feel like you're cutting off the foot or the hand.
Yeah.
You gotta take something out.
You're not, man. You gotta, that's the other thing about writing short stories is you realize how many ideas you really have.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, I can, you know, collaborate here. And, you know, life is a collaboration. So you have to learn how to do that. Even as a creative, even as an author who sits in the house and kind of writes on their own all day or whatever you do, life is a collaboration. So you're gonna have to, you know, meet with some others about your stuff. If you're building with the right people and you're learning and you know who you want to do stuff with and who you don't, and you have brilliant minds around you that you trust, then when they say something that for you is like, oh, you know, I didn't see it like that, or maybe you don't even really agree with, you have to go to 10,000 feet and say, does this make the work better? Because if it makes the piece better, it doesn't matter if you don't agree with it.
Like, 100%.
Like you should agree with it because it makes the piece better. Like, the notes I got recently on a feature, I was like, makes the piece better.
Exactly.
And I didn't expect to hear it, but I was like, and I also saw what he was saying. I learned something. You learn something when you listen. You know, you'll improve. You want to be a better writer, man. Like, if you have people around you, you know, this guy, I've known him for a while. That was one of the first things he said. He said, somebody that's about to tell you is just going to make you better, a better writer.
Yeah.
And he was right. And I was just very appreciative of that. So you got to, like, you know, you have to find, again,
ego,
it goes to,
dude.
Check your ego. It goes back to, considered a source, right? Like, somebody says to you, somebody who all they do all day is read screenplays, and they're a development exec, and they're very good at what they do. This guy used to work in some big places. It's like, you know, you have to say to yourself, okay, like, this person with this skill set is saying to me, I'm going to tell you something that's going to make you a better writer. Even if it's something that you're going to have to change some stuff that you initially, you know, when you hear it, you may not want to change or whatever. It's like, consider the source. If the source is that individual, make the changes and then, like, read it for yourself and see, like, is the piece better? If the piece is better, then say, wow, this did make me a better writer. It's like, refinement is difficult, man.
It is.
Refinement is not easy, man. It's like, you know, refinement not supposed to be easy. Refinement is supposed to be difficult.
It's
so whoever is a better writer, or you're trying to you play ball or whatever it is
sacrifice,
you're doing.
Like,
you're
a cook, discipline.
You know what I mean? Like
self-reflection.
Yeah, you gotta. Refinement's hard. You know, you're gonna. You know, it's running a business, whatever it is you do, it's hard. So you have to accept the fact that, like, this is not gonna be easy. And there's gonna be things in here that I don't wanna do. But, like, the question at the end of the day is, have I become refined? Have I become better at what it is I'm doing?
I think, like all artists, the ego, it's there. I mean, it's kind of what drives you to create, but to check it enough to accept, like, you know, criticism, different points of view, you're gonna see things that you couldn't see before, maybe right on the spot, you're just not gonna fucking feel what they're saying, right. But you come back and you're like, oh wow, like you said, it makes it better. It's like, what do you care about? Do you want the whole project to be better? Do you want the I don't like to use the word the product, but like the piece to be better, or do you just want to protect your ego?
Yeah, yeah, that the you have to destroy your ego over and over again.
Yeah,
in life, and this is as artists, I'm saying it, but. In every area of your life,
it's
you got to just over and over again, because it will come up, especially as men. You'll have it. It will come up. There are times where the energy from it can be useful, but you really got to, like, check it and tone it down and be mindful of it. I think that what happens is a lot of people also refine, like, check. Doing that is hard.
Yeah.
That's why people don't
want to. And that goes back to what we were saying, the people who just won't put their stuff out.
Yeah,
because that requires a shattering your own ego, or at least being willing to.
Yeah, you're to not put stuff out, the fear of that is also ego, just as much as putting the stuff out and getting a response from someone who knows about, you know, whatever the genre is or whatever the distribution channel is, and telling you something you don't want to hear and being all irritated once you hear it and saying this, getting into an argument or this, that, and the third, that's also ego.
Yeah.
Both are ego. They're at the, you know, differing ends of the spectrum for ego. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you gotta sometimes see if you're drifting really far one direction or really far in the other direction.
Ugh.
Like staying like ego is like it kind of pulls you both ways. I feel like so trying to hover around the middle is like the best we can all do. You know what I mean? So it's one of these things that, like, over time you say, like, oh, okay, like, I'm moving in this direction because I got some negative feedback that I didn't appreciate. But in reality, if I look at what it is,
the
person didn't know what they're talking about. Or I'm being too beholden to, like, I'm too afraid. I don't want somebody to say something, because then, like, the ego I have will be shattered.
Yeah.
If somebody.
And sometimes, you know, you got to have this shit crushed a little bit, and then you kind of build your confidence back up. And I feel like every time you rebuild it back up, it's stronger.
Stronger.
You're wiser, stronger, and you're able to kind of go through more now,
like,
you know, whether it's rejection or disappointment from what you created yourself or how it's received or whatever, you could withstand more.
People that's also respect part. It, man. Like I'll hear people talk a lot about Nipsey Hussle, right?
Yeah.
So it's like Nip was like that, you know, he was just putting stuff out. He was, you know, doing it it's his true. Way.
Slow with the, grind. Too.
You know, slow grind, like the, you know, with the whole own his masters, like that process. And like, but it was like every time he did a thing, he learned something new. He improved.
Yeah.
And he always talked about that, about what that process is like.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. That's the whole marathon concept. It's like, you got to just keep going.
And he became, you know, eventually somebody that people looked at him for wise words.
Exactly.
They revere his advice or his, I don't even say his advice, just the way he carried himself, the way he handled his business. And people look at that as a template now.
Right.
You know?
That mentality, like people. So it's you earn people's respect when you approach whatever it is you're doing, whatever your craft in life is, whatever it is you're doing in that way, when you just say, I'm gonna keep going, I'm gonna keep working on it.
Yeah.
Like I'm gonna take wise advice, wise counsel, and I'm gonna apply it.
Yep.
I'm not gonna be too foolhardy or too hard headed to not listen
to
people.
Big for your britches. That
rarely
does that.
I'm not
pay
gonna
off.
Do that. It doesn't pay off. The longer you do that, the more time you waste. Really,
it's true.
That's why, you know, a lot of artists, whether it's actors or whatever, like, people don't really develop out here because they don't want to listen to others. They don't want to do this. They don't want to listen to that
keep
teacher,
a bunch
that
of yes
culture.
Men
right.
Around you.
They want to keep people around them that tell them and make them feel good about things. And it's like, that's not
it's
improving
a,
you.
It's an artificial reality that
100%.
You create for yourself, and it's not going to help you grow. And there's people who are willing to play that part of the yes men for them because whatever, they're getting something out of the byproduct of it, but it's not healthy for you as
not
an artist.
Not at all. It's even if you've had some success, it's not healthy.
No, I mean,
sometimes especially
you'll plateau, and that's what happens. Yeah. You get a little success, then you have everybody telling you how great everything is, and then you stay in that bubble and you plateau. And
right.
That might be it. You know, right. You never grow, or you sink, you drop back
yeah.
down.
Yeah, I mean, to use Oppenheimer again, Christopher Nolan really challenged Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see
great example,
see,
right?
see the result.
Exactly, because you know he was probably getting a little pigeonholed in Marvel movies.
Is
Tony Stark,
he's Iron Man for a long time.
Yeah, like, and he even said himself, he's like, you know, I want to do more. I don't know. Yeah. I want to say art house movies, but quality acting. And he's got a couple roles coming up, and he just got an Oscar. And dude, that was maybe his best performance ever.
I thought he was
Christopher Nolan's not gonna let you turn in some garbage, you know. Yeah. And he really impressed me with that. Like, not a spoiler alert, but he plays a great villainous character.
Sure, but you gotta
semi spoiler.
Yeah, you gotta be challenged by, again, consider the source. You gotta be challenged by somebody.
Great point.
Who's you know, at the top of the marketplace. He's like, listen, you can. There's more meat on the bone, as it were.
So maybe down the line, Nolan has got avarice on the big screen. Maybe
that'd be dope. Real, I'm with that. Incredible. You know.
But you do have ambitions or some plans to have, you know, screenplays.
Like I said, so it's three stories. One of the stories is called The Compromise, and I'm working on an adaptation for the screen right now for that. An interesting process when you're doing something that was a short, that was, you know, that you're transitioning into a feature. But the thing about it is, you always have to ask yourself how you're telling the story in the medium, and what is required in that medium, right? For short stories, like, I can go inside the character and come back out to action and dialogue, and I kind of have to spread out my background. There are some things that are similar, I would say, spreading out tidbits in the story, learning about a character. There's some similarities there with a screenplay and with writing a short story or a book. I would say that the differences are, when you have a visual thing that you're telling a story with, you're relying on all these other elements. There are all these other departments when you make a film or a TV show: wardrobe, hair, makeup, you know, the actors themselves. You know, it's like your sets, all this kind of stuff, you know, effects, you know, whether it's kind of live effects, your pyrotechnics, or green screen. There are all these things you're doing. So it's like, as the writer, you know, there's an old saying, you know, don't tell the actors how to act, don't tell the director how to direct when you write a screenplay. Just write a screenplay, because you're going to have all these other creative minds come to the table and bring what they do, and you have to leave them space to be able to do that. You know what I mean? So it's like, you want to write something that is a really fantastic, very intelligently specific blueprint that can lead people as to, okay, this is, if it's wardrobe, it's like, this is what this character would wear on a daily. If it's hair and makeup, this is what this person needs to look like in this particular scene. If, you know, all those people are artists.
Yeah.
And we look at the actors and the directors all the time, but we forget about
the makeup,
like,
the hair. Yes,
everybody.
Sure. Yeah, the set design.
You know,
DP,
the sound engineering.
All
it's like all these different people, right, who put together a film. So, but when you're writing a book,
it's a lot of layers.
Yeah, when you're writing a book, you have to do it concisely in a way that can build that in the mind of the reader.
Yeah.
And if you do it very well, then you end up sometimes with, like, you know, it's funny, Lord of the Rings is a good example, because a lot of people who read the books they'll tell you, man, that film looked like when I read it as a kid. My sister said that. She was like, she read Lord of the Rings as a kid. She's like, when I saw the movies, it was like exactly what I saw in my mind.
That's the interesting thing with books, because your imagination is doing a lot of work, and then you'll see, you know, maybe if different directors adapt the same book or from an anthology, you'll see different interpretations of what they're like, you know, like the David Lynch Dune versus Villeneuve's Dune. I can't pronounce his name, but you know, did he capture it better? I mean, better pictures for sure, but
two different time periods of filmmaking as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
you know, it depends on the character themselves. You know, they're doing a new Alex Cross show with Aldous Hodge as the lead.
Oh, word.
And so, you know, you've had Morgan Freeman, you had Tyler Perry as Alex Cross, now you have Aldous Hodge.
True.
Those are completely different actors. They're all black male actors, but they're totally different. You know what I mean? So it's like, that also falls into it. So it depends on how you want to approach.
What kind of presentation or interpretation you
want to make. How you want to approach it in adaptation.
All the Batmans.
Yeah, all the Batmans are perfect examples.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, Batman could be viewed in so many different ways, and everybody has their favorite. Some people are Bale people.
Some
people
true.
Are. I'm probably gonna always be Michael Keaton, because that was Batman
as
a kid.
It was like a fun campy, but not soft campy.
Yeah,
you know?
like
Tim Burton world.
He's me. It's like him, and then like everybody else. Yeah. Like Bale's super high. Yeah, I love Bale as Batman. But like, but that's not his fault. Like there's a generation of kids that watch Christian Bale, like, that's Batman. Like, you know what I mean? There's people who are watching now with Ben Affleck, that's Batman. So it's like, it's not, there's sometimes not like this better or worse. It's just like, just what different. What's the interpretation of it? But there's, it's interesting to be doing an adaptation because you start to see like why certain books that are bestsellers don't like ever really get made into films because it's, you know, that process is.
What do you think that is? Because I was talking about that with a friend of mine about a Blood Meridian, Cormac McCarthy book.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I'll talk a little broadly about it. I think that like, you know, as a screenwriter, you're looking for ways to build something visually that's going to be really dope.
Yeah.
Every bestseller book doesn't do that necessarily. Like, you can tell a story that's like, it can just be a journey. It can be a journey that took a few days. It could be a novel, right? And, you know, that doesn't necessarily translate to like
visual.
This fantastic, visually stunning piece. And I think that like,
that's a good point.
But authors aren't caring. They don't care about that. They want to make the best novel. So like, they want to write what's in their head. They're not worried about what's this going to look like as a feature
film. That's true.
So for me, I'm not trying to do both at the same time. I want to write the best shorts I can write, and then I want to write the best feature I can write. However different they are, that's the other thing I'm finding is that there are some things that just kind of have to be different from the feature to the story, which I'm fine with because I'm like, I just want to write the best feature.
Yeah.
The source material is the source material, but like, I want to write the best feature. I want to deal with somebody to help me develop that. Some people are sticklers
too. They're like, oh, he changed it. It's not like the book or whatever. And like sometimes it's got to. I mean, Game of Thrones. Composite characters you got to make.
Yeah, Game of Thrones did that, right? There was plenty of things in the TV show that weren't in the books that were very different or whatever. And people that read the books, like, they kind of care, but not really.
Yeah.
Because
there's a lot of that with comic book fans.
Yeah, the tenets of the book were essentially the same, and same thing with comic books. It's like, so it's like, people accept that, I think. Today's reader / viewer.
I hope so.
Accepts that. And I think that all that really matters is, are you making the best version of this story in whatever your medium is? Are you making the best TV show version of this book? Are you making the best film version of this story? Are you writing the best book at all? Is kind of like always where it starts at. But knowing that TV and film is 99% of the time a derivative of a book when it's an adaptation.
I love that too.
It's usually not the other way around. Yeah. It's usually not that you do a film and then you write the book.
And it's funny how, I mean, people read, but they don't read like they used to, or maybe it's my generation doesn't read as much, but everybody loves movies and TV. But like you said, usually it's coming from a book. It's derived from a book.
Yeah, it's been like that forever in Hollywood. It's funny, this thriller I wrote recently, I did a lot of old Hollywood research, which was fun to watch these golden era Hitchcock movies.
Yeah, I love that, dude.
You know, I read up on it. I actually read a biography of a really famous screenwriter named Ben Hecht, because Ben Hecht wrote he wrote tons of stuff, and kind of created much of the template for what a Hollywood screenplay is today. But like, that was, you know, his era, and it just, so going back and watching that stuff, you realize even then a lot of that was an adaptation of a play. Yeah, it was an adaptation of a book. A lot of plays were turned into feature films, because in the beginning, they were just kind of shooting plays on stages, and there weren't as many setups. Yeah. You know, you can kind of tell it doesn't make the films any less. If you get a chance for your listeners, there's a great old film with Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman called Notorious
that I watched. I mean, I've seen it, but I know that
so
film. Good.
It's black and white. It's so like, but you could see exactly how that play out on the stage. But at the same time,
sets were also a lot more minimal in movies.
Yeah, it's very minimal. And they were still trying to figure out what film was to a certain degree, right? Yeah. Which I suppose we are today with the different technology we have. But like, it's a thing where like, but the acting is still great, and the story is still really great. And it's like, I thought the end was fantastic, but I hadn't watched Notorious before, right? And I just sat down and watched it all the way through, and I was like, man, that's like awesome.
It was fluid.
Yeah, and this is just like a great piece that like, no matter how you're telling this story about, you know, some kind of like espionage involved and there's some international story.
Sounds great.
You know, it's really cool. Like, but it's like at the end of the day, it's being told in this wonderful way visually, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I just like, you realize that like, it's not a new thing. Adaptations aren't a new thing. People think Marvel and this, that, and third, and intellectual property and, you know, IP. I'm like, it's Hollywood's always been like that. Since it's been around, it's been like that.
It's true. And rarely, you know, they always will say like the book is better than the movie. Is there any movie you could think of that's better than the book? I was trying to think about that the other day. Actually,
it's tough because you're starting to like, I don't know. Like I mean, if I were to measure,
I can't really think.
Yeah, I mean, were to measure, like, it's hard because I'm trying to think of films that I love that are amazing. I saw something on Malcolm X earlier today, and I'm only using that as an example.
Yeah, I mean, that Spike Lee did an incredible job adapting that, but the book still...
I don't think that's not... Yeah, no, it's the not book better still hits harder. Yeah. Malcolm X. But, like, at the same time, that's about as close as that's you probably, can come.
Yeah, that's the best biopic film I feel like there's...
I mean, Denzel is just... That's, he's yeah, it's a masterful, so far off the charts, it's not even...
That
like,
was a criminally his underrated film in all facets of filmmaking.
It's one of... even now in Denzel's career, with all of the work that he's done, it's just like that film just still. My parents, when that film came out, they said that they were like, we were alive to see Malcolm X. That is the closest representation you will see of him.
Yeah. Spike Lee's direction in that is, that's like the apex of his skills, I feel like, too. Yeah. I mean, he's great, but like that picture, he just, it all came together.
But it's a thing where, like, you know, the book is, it gives you a different feel.
Yeah.
You know, like when you read an autobiography like that, like I read, you know, I'm kind of working on some projects or a project with those who are in charge of Frederick Douglass's legacy right now.
Okay.
On their foundation. We're hoping that we can get some things going in the graphic novel space with some people I've been working with lately. And so I read, he has three autobiographies, and I've read the first one and the third one. Life and Times of Frederick Douglass is really what this set of graphic novels is based upon. And that would be extraordinary to make a film just about that. But it's like, there have been so many representations of Frederick Douglass through the years in film and TV that it's like, it's almost hard to encapsulate. Like, if you read The Life and Times of Frederick Douglass, which was, what he wrote later in life and kind of tells his whole story, obviously, that he's now an older man and he can have some, he can look back in retrospect and really have some perspective on everything. It's like, you know, now that I think of like how he's presented in like The Good Lord Bird, which was, I thought, a great show with
the John Brown.
It's like Ethan Hawke. It's like, and then like how he's portrayed here, portrayed there, and all these different pieces. It's like, this is true. It's not the whole story though. This one is true. It's not the whole story. So I think that's the part about film and TV that you never really, there's a limit.
Yeah.
And also you're very, when you have a story that has famous characters, whether they're real people or fictional, you gotta have the actor to like really do that. Like, you gotta figure that out casting wise.
Yeah,
like,
and that's tough. It's not,
it's
just
very
who
hard.
Who looks similar, but
and part of that is why there's been so many Batmans. Because who is he really? Like in your mind, like what does he actually like look like?
Yeah.
And then you have, that's why I can so easily pull on this actor, because like Batman looks different to me than he does to you. You have a different version of him in your mind. You know what I mean? So when you have a great fictional character, Alex Cross, Jack Ryan's another one. Everybody's been Jack Ryan. Reacher, Tom Cruise's Reacher.
Like,
he's tiny.
He's a 5'6".
Like, you're like, no offense, Tom, but like you're not as big as the homie that's playing Reacher right now on Amazon. He's a huge guy. Which is in the book, that's what he's supposed to be, right? So it's like, you know, it's how do you want to tell a story, and then like, what does he look like in the minds of most people?
Yeah,
you know. So I think that's what makes those things interesting. Better or worse is subjective, man. Like, it depends on like I like to judge things again based on the medium.
Yeah,
like I want to watch a great show.
Yeah,
I want to read a great book. I don't want to be comparing the book to the, it's like, well, it's hard not to. Well, yeah, but that's fine. But like, that probably says more about how you consume a great story as opposed to like, which is actually better.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like, does it really, I hate to say, does it matter? But like, it's one of those things where like, that's a question you kind of have to ask yourself. You're always like, oh man, the book's always better. And you probably like reading books more than you like watching film and TV. You know what I mean? Which is like, not the fault of these other viewers who went and saw the movie and like, oh, the movie's incredible.
Yeah.
And they're like, the book's better.
It's also how personal it is to you or the subject matter. Like, you know, people who are boxers or fighters, they watch a movie like that. They can't, doesn't matter how good it is, they can't get away from if it's realistic or not in the fighting. Or if they're really personally attached to the story, or somebody like a crime guy, they'll watch a mob movie, they're like, no, no, that's fake, that would never happen.
That's fake, that wouldn't happen.
It could be Goodfellas or Godfather, and they'll still rip it apart
because
they're so close to that.
It's so close to the world, 100%.
Tough, whatever. So, where are we gonna get Avarice, dude? Let people know too.
Amazon and
shit out of
yeah. There. So my book is coming out May 20th. It's called Avarice, a short story anthology by Dustin Green.
May 20th.
Shout out to the homie Chris Lewis who did the audiobook. You can get it as an ebook on Amazon right now. You can pre-order it. It's very affordable at 99 cents. Same thing on Audible. I think it costs a couple dollars, but you can do one whole credit on Audible. And yeah, there's an audio preview there, so you guys can get a taste of Chris's voice. I'm pretty sure there's also a reader preview for the ebook. And dude, it's like, I'm very proud of it. On Kindle, it's only like 69 pages. Audiobooks
breeze
only
through that in the afternoon.
Breeze through that. Yeah, audiobooks, 2 hours.
Step into Dustin's realm, dude.
I got a little special gift in there. I won't say exactly what it is, but I got a little special gift in there that's connected to my other writing over on Substack. So when you do get the ebook, expect a little gift in there. I just want to show appreciation to people who are supporting me. This is obviously my first book. So I appreciate readers. I appreciate people that support me. It really does make a difference. All the stuff we talked about earlier,
being
an artist and like putting your stuff out there is difficult. So when people,
and it's intimate, dude. It's coming from your soul, your heart. You know?
So when people like, you know, download or purchase or read or listen, like, I appreciate that. So there's a little gift in there for everybody too. But yeah, May 20th. I appreciate this podcast. You'll see some other stuff, doing some interviews and whatnot.
Nice,
so,
dude. What as far as sci-fi films that are out now, most adapted from books, favorite and least favorite in last 5 years? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
I still got to get to Dune. I've been super busy. Well, a new Dune.
You could dodge the David Lynch one, and I'm a huge Lynch fan, but it was not great. Yeah, you got the dude from fucking Twin Peaks in there, Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think here. I mean, I saw, like, I don't know if the creator was, I can't off the top of my head remember if that was based on the book. I think it was. I thought the creator was really good.
My girl liked that a lot. I didn't catch it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of all the science fiction films that I've watched in the last 5 years.
I didn't finish it, not because it wasn't good, but I was really busy and I fell asleep 3 times.
That's the creator?
No, Tenet.
Tenet. I mean, Tenet is, you know, Tenet is Tenet. like that's the best way to describe it. Tenet is Tenet. Like, everybody has a different, I like it because everybody has a different opinion about it. And it's like, everybody's kind of right in a way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I would say, well, I mean, I guess it's Dune. I mean, Dune is just, you know, what Villeneuve was doing with that series is just
big production.
Yeah.
Since you're such a gentleman and a kind dude, we're gonna flip it. Worst one, the worst sci-fi flick in the last 5 years.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, there's so many things that are out there now, man.
That's true. It's flooded.
There's so many things that are out there.
Straight to Amazon Prime.
I'm positive. I watched something on like, and listen, shout out to Tubi because Tubi is smart and they do. Yeah. I love watching Tubi. And there's amazing stuff on Tubi. They're doing great things with originals, but there's also just like stuff on there. And I'm positive I've watched something. That's why I don't remember the titles. Because I'm positive I've watched the first 10 minutes of something and was like,
there's some real low quality organized crime stuff on there that I'm like, wow, I just spent 20 minutes, wasted 20 minutes of my life on that one.
Yeah, but I love like, you got all of it. They deliver all of it to you and they're like, you're just like hacking
Heads
through the wilderness.
Sleep on Tubi,
yeah, man. You're just like hacking through the wilderness. Like, part of the fun of Tubi is just hacking through the wilderness. Because I watched The Fugitive on Tubi not long ago, right? Like, I watched classics on there. All these old films I was talking about, they're on Tubi, which is brilliant. And they have cool originals too, like, and like some great indie films. But there's some stuff on there I'm like, all right, I'm gonna give this film like 10 minutes. And then, or the show 10 minutes.
Is that Dustin Green's like time? I'm giving you 10 minutes.
Yeah,
that's
man.
Pretty good. That's pretty good.
10 minutes is an eternity.
Damn, he's a nice guy. He's prolific, but he is cutthroat. 10 minutes, are you done?